Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You hang up being there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
All right, time for another installment of It's My House. And while we're getting revved up here, if you're online, if you go to our go to our Blog Talk Radio page. Okay, go to Blog Talk Radio and look for It's My House or Solar Landlord, and you'll see today's scrolling marquee. And there's some what I call jump-off topics that we'll talk about today. Today's live stream is titled 2023 Calendar Pre-Order versus Pre-Made. Now, this is in regard to housing. We'll go into details on that as we get into the program, but we'll be back in a few minutes with that.
Thank you.
Oh, caught me off guard. All right. That's Disturb a Land of Confusion. We found the Phil Collins version of that, or Genesis version of that. And I'm just trying to find a converter that will let me upload it without corrupting my system. So hopefully over the weekend we'll have that up and have it on Monday. All right. I've adjusted the or amended today's live stream title, and it's now 2023 calendar, because we want to get some momentum going into next year. Pre-order versus pre-made when it comes to housing and Walmart chess strategy, because I believe the win at the tiny house game, a sustainable housing game, we're going to have to play chess in real life like Walmart did. So we'll get to that. And we'll be opening the phone lines here, and if I can get a hold of it, I'm trying to find, in 3 minutes.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer at the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, a little morning motivation to get us started. Like I said, our jump-off title is 2023 pre-order versus pre-made. This is in regards to tiny houses. And I just amended the title, which I included, Walmart Chess. I think the game of chess is a very good game where if you learn how to play it and the strategies and the defenses and the offenses, you can apply that to real life. Now, maybe about a half hour ago, I ran across, and this is why I amended today's title. And I want to blend it in what we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. There was a builder in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, that a tiny house manufacturer. And they recently shut down because the according to this person, the housing regulation regulations for Oklahoma City, I mean, they were just getting nickel and dime on. You need a fee for this, you need a permit for this, you need a permit for that, or what have you. And, you know, even if they built them, a lot of people were not buying them because I'll put it this way, they didn't know where to legally park them. Now, once again, using the chessboard, which has 67 squares, just like in life, real life, you need to know the landscape. Now, Oklahoma City is the largest city with over 600,000 people that live in the city. So when you get into a population of that size, like the larger the city or the larger the community, the more rules and regulations and the less freedom you have to do whatever you wanted to do in life, including just everyday living. All right, so then it just popped up in my head, you know what? We need to play the real-life chess game like Walmart Sam Walton when he was alive, and I'm sure they use this same strategy to this day. And I'm even throwing the Amish and the Mennonites. All right. It's going to be very difficult unless it's a municipal-sanctioned, government-sanctioned tiny house. I'll give an example. There was an artist that was building tiny houses using, he reclaimed material that had just been tossed away in Los Angeles, California, about 5 or 6 years ago. Maybe 7 at the outset. And code enforcement, and he was giving them away. All right. Code enforcement, and he had them on wheels. Now, he had them on casters, those type of wheels. So a homeless person can basically roll their tiny house to wherever they wanted to roll it. All right. Los Angeles code enforcement, here's another thing you need. Code enforcement out in some parts of Los Angeles County, it's armed code enforcement. Let's call them the housing police. But they came along and they made all those people give up their tiny houses, or they confiscated them and destroyed them. Now, last year, or within the time of this pandemic, the city of Los Angeles now has their own tiny house community. Now, that's why I play that piece at the beginning of this podcast every day, because there's a political piece to this. Now, if you want to eliminate what I would call meddlesome government, or, and that might not be the word, but crack-addicted government. Let me use that analogy, crack-addicted government. A crack fiend, a drug addict, has to have their next fix. They're always looking for money to feed their drug-addicted appetite. All right. Now, if you look at a city, particularly a larger city, they've got a payroll to meet every 2 weeks. And sometimes in the United States, you have some local governments that have unionized employees. Unionized employees are expensive. American labor, generally speaking, as compared to the global economy, is expensive. All right. They have a pension fund to meet. Nobody wants to go belly up and declare bankruptcy like Detroit did a number of years ago, or Harrisburg, Pennsylvania did a number of years ago. All right. So, in the idea of a tiny house, they haven't figured out, how to tax it where somebody that would want to live in one, I mean, they can afford it. So I'm going to suggest that we put on our chess hats and we play chess, real life chess, just like Walmart does and the Amish and the Mennonites. Now, there are 3,573 Walmart supercenters in the United States. There are 799 neighborhood Walmarts in the United States for the neighborhood niche market. Then there are 370 discount Walmart stores in the United States. And there's a number of locations which have no Walmarts at all. And so if you can, get a map of Walmart locations. If you're going to set up anywhere near Walmart, you want to go maybe, it depends on, you know, we had to do a whole podcast on that. I don't want to get in that right now. There are 19,500 municipal towns in the United States, and then, of course, there's a whole bunch of unincorporated communities all across the United States, which dwarf 19,500. But here's where you can get them at. Type in any search engine, Amish communities or Amish settlements map. Make sure you put map in there, of the United States. And those are the areas wherever the Amish and Mennonite, particularly the Amish, have set up camp. Those are some of the best places, not the only places, but some of the best places where you can buy some land and put your tiny house on it and even start a tiny house village. Now, there's more detail into this and whatnot. There's a film, a documentary that I suggest that you watch titled Garbage Warrior, and it focuses in on this guy, Michael Reynolds, who I guess you would call the American version of the Earthship movement. And they were now, Earthships basically take stuff that people cast away and they build houses out of them. Actually, they're called Earthships. They're not called houses. Because that word house, H-O-U-S-E, is regulated. However, to my knowledge, the term Earthship is not regulated as of yet. Anyway, they were in the middle of some desert out in New Mexico. Nobody was around them. And I think they got like 3 or 4 Earthships built or in stages of being built. And then I don't know how code enforcement finds it, but they got flagged because somebody said they were trying to do a subdivision. And if you do a subdivision, that's a whole kettle of fish. And we're not going to get into that aspect today because we'll have to get on Clubhouse to break all that stuff down. We had time constraints here. But homework assignment. Check out Garbage, and it's free on, YouTube, Garbage Warrior. One of the terms I want you to watch out for in that film, you can look this up online as well, Pockets of Freedom. That's the term that Michael Reynolds came up with. And those are places in the United States where you can basically do what you want to do as far as alternative housing or extreme housing is concerned. Tiny houses, in the eyes of larger municipalities like Oklahoma City, New York City, Los Angeles, California, they're considered extreme housing, and they put the handcuffs on you. So you're going to have to find areas. That's why I'm saying, look at, like, for instance, the lady that got shut down in Oklahoma City, she really should have been looking at smaller markets to set up shop. So that's what I recommend. Check out Walmart, okay, and look at, matter of fact, if you can get a hold of his book, Sam Walton's book, all right, find out where, how he built that. He didn't start off in places like New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, or Seattle. He started off in Bentonville, Arkansas. Go to like the small towns, and that's where it's at. Okay. On that note, whatever you guys want to talk about, let's go to Chris Collins and Carlos Villamar. Let's see. Okay. I'll open up both mics at the same time.
Good morning,
Chris. Hope you had a nice turkey day yesterday or whatever you ate.
I did. And,
okay, great.
That was wonderful. So, yep.
Oh, and before we go to Carlos, like I said, this podcast, I'm looking at 2023. So I'm looking at, I'm just thinking out loud, everybody. Okay. This week, Thanksgiving week is National Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week. So it's my house, the stream that we're on right now. Next year, the Thanksgiving week of November 2023, we shall be building houses. All right? I'm announcing that today. Because we had to plan for that. We're also going to be doing something on, I believe, July 30th, whatever the last Saturday in July is of 2023. We'll have at least one, well, right now we got one location. In Chicago, we'll be doing a partnership with Reclaiming Our Children. And we'll have the person who founded that on that later. She's been on here before, though. So that's the last weekend in July, and then let's see what else I have. Oh, and October the 10th, 2023, I think that's Homeless Awareness Day, Homeless Awareness Day, okay? So we'll be building on that day, all right? And then hopefully some of the structures that we'll be building are what we've been talking about, Dream Habitat, those structures. So, Carlos, good morning, Carlos. Hope we had a great turkey day, or whatever you ate.
Yeah, yes, sir. Thank you very much. We spent it with my family and our sister-in-law and our nieces and nephews, so we had a wonderful time. Thank you.
Great. Now, Carlos, you gave a share yesterday. Man, that really motivated me. I mean, you gave the backstory that you were homeless at one time. So that's why I had to bring out the calendar. Because I'm looking at now, the Marion Styles thing, I played with the kids with no hands and went out for the basketball team and made it and even scored. I looked at, once again, I said, now, you guys are the perfect example, Batman and Robin, the two Batmans, whatever, that if more people heard your story, and that's what I'm saying. It's the more people are here, and then you give them a horse to ride on. But you've got the horse. All right. You and Chris have the horse. Then things will really turn around. So I'm going to get off of my soapbox right now. And Carlos, I'll give you the floor, and you can just take it off wherever you want to go.
Yeah, you know, that I would love to find, is that a YouTube video of Mr. Styles, the athlete with no arms?
Look it up and I'll send it to you via Clubhouse today.
Awesome. That's such an inspiring story. You know, it seems really incredible. You know, as far as my situation, you know, I was a student and I didn't, you know, as you know, it's difficult being a student because you're going to school, you know, trying to work, trying to pay rent, all that stuff at the same time, especially if you're not supported. And, you know, I would take out student loans and stuff, but, you know, there's times when things just, well, where I'd be in between schools or in between jobs. And I found myself at one point jobless, and the rental to share that I had ended. So I found myself without a job and without a place to sleep. Luckily, I had a car, so I was I would drive around. You know, I had friends in the neighborhood, which I'd hang out with during the day, and they would sneak me food or whatever, let me sleep in their garage if their parents didn't catch me. And then I would go into the park. It's actually, there's a little rocket in the park at in Hacienda Heights, California. And it was like this little two-story rocket that the kids could climb. You know, it's like a jungle gym. And I would go up there with my sleeping bag and just put the sleeping bag there and sleep. I would get every once in a while rousted by the park police. You know, they would come by and tell me that I couldn't sleep there. But, you know, it was what it was. And, you know, my background is military. So, you know, the stuff they put us through, it's not too difficult, you know, especially in California where the weather is nice. You know, here on the East Coast, it would be a lot more difficult. But, yeah, you know, that's the situation I found myself in. But I was working towards an electrical engineering degree. And that's what I did after that. I went to school pretty much the rest of my life. I got a degree in electrical engineering. Then I got a master's in electrical engineering. And then later on, I got a law degree. So now I'm a patent attorney. And being a patent attorney, you know, we work with inventions, you know. So I've always been an inventor at heart, you know, ever since I was a little kid. I was taking things apart and trying to put them back together and figuring out how things worked. I took auto shop at college, so, you know, I knew how to take apart engines and stuff like that. I never did construction. Besides, you know, like construction labor, I never did any skilled construction work like framing and that kind of stuff. I was the one that was, like, carrying the mud, you know, and bringing it up the scaffold and, you know, what I call the manual labor. But, yeah, so I've been working full-time since high school to pay for everything. And I've been working full-time through my whole entire education. I've never had the privilege of just going to school. You know, I've always had to survive at the same time, which makes it really hard. You know, like, you know, it's bad enough, you know, having to go to school and, you know, but when you have to go to school and also work full-time and also, you know, survive, it makes it very, very difficult. But the military gave me the right mindset. I was going to be a pararescueman, which a special forces combat medic in the Air Force. And, you know, we went through some pretty rigorous stuff. You know, people don't believe this, but we used to get drowned. They used to call it underwater harassment training. Now it's called water confidence. But when I went in 78, this was right after the Vietnam War. So the instructors were pretty hardened and they had been to battle. So they wanted to make sure that the next men that go through are going to have what it takes. So back then they were allowed to pull you back underwater when you were trying to get air, believe it or not. So, you know, we had 40 guys that went in. Only 10 of us graduated. The other 30 washed out from indoctrination training. And it wasn't, you know, we were all, I had a black belt in karate. I was running 6 miles a day. I was in really good shape. Most of the guys were. They were all football players, wrestlers, you know, what I call docs, runners, swimmers. And, you know, out of 40 guys, 10 of us made it, and it wasn't the running, the swimming, the push-ups. In fact, one of our weakest members, he was a runner. He could run like a gazelle. The guy could do like 4.5-minute miles, 5-minute miles, you know, for 6 miles. So he was a running athlete. But he had no upper chest strength, so he struggled with every single push-up, every single pull-up. He struggled, but this is the thing about special forces or special operations. It's all the mind. You know, they're looking for guys that just have the mental fortitude to just keep pushing. You know, because the thing is you can break any – I can break anybody down in an hour. You know, give me any man in 1 hour, I'll have him where he can't do another push-up. Can't do another pull-up. You can break anybody down physically. What you can't do is break some people down mentally. And that's what they're trying to teach you in special operations, is that, you know, your mind is the most important component. Your body is needed, obviously, you need the physicality, but your mind is what gets you through it. And that, you know, that gave me that mental fortitude so that, you know, when I got out of the Air Force, I had a big decision, you know, either stay in California, no job, no family, no income, no mother, because the Air Force, you know, was my mother at that time, or go back and try to move in with my parents, you know, and do that thing, you know. And I looked at it as a challenge. I said, you know I can take the easy way. I can go home and you know, live off my parents and go to college, et cetera. But I wanted to do everything on my own. You know, I had gotten some independence. So I said, I'm going to stay in California. I'm going to do whatever it takes. So I started taking any job I could, you know, construction, flipping burgers, whatever I could find. And I, you know, I worked my way through undergrad. It took me 7 years to get my undergrad degree because I goofed off in high school. I intentionally graduated with straight D's, believe it or not, even though I'm very, very smart. I didn't believe in school, and I wanted to get out of high school and just become a millionaire. You know, I was going to get out of high school and start a company and become a millionaire. And, of course, reality hits you when you finally get out of high school and you're trying to find a job and you're, like, you know, looking around. I was very lucky. I found a job at the Metro. I was working for the D.C. Metro, which was paying, I think, $3 over minimum wage at the time, which was, you know, for me as a high school kid, I was like, whoa, this is the most money I've ever seen. You know, I was living with my parents, so I didn't have, you know, I didn't have a lot of expenses. But I had signed up for the Air Force, and, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm a person of my word, so I had already signed the contract, and all my friends are like, you can get out of it, you know, you got a good job, why don't you just stay? And yes, that would have been the path of least resistance, and something you're going to see about myself is I never take the path of least resistance. I always take the hardest path, and the reason for that is because, you know, you can always take the easy path. The hard path is what challenges you. So I made a decision to stay in California and did odd jobs, you know, was homeless for, I think, about 2 months or so, 2 or 3 months. But I was lucky, you know, and this is where gratitude comes in. You know, even while I was homeless, I had friends that helped me, you know, and I think the true wealth are friends and family. That's my true wealth. Everything else doesn't matter. You know, all this material stuff doesn't matter. So I became an electrical engineer, and then I got a job at General Dynamics, and they paid for my college. They gave me a huge salary. I used that to springboard into a design job at Hughes Aircraft, and then I worked on fighter aircraft. I worked on the F-15, the F-18. I helped design the flight computer for the YF-22 Raptor, which is the advanced tactical fighter. And this was just 2 years out of college. And then I applied for the Advanced Circuit Technology Group, which is the research and development group of Hughes Aircraft. And, you know, I was a state school kid. You know, I didn't go to Berkeley or Caltech or MIT or Stanford. And all the kids that went to those schools were the ones in these R&D jobs, you know, because that's the way it works. You know, the kids that go to those schools, they're the ones that get into R&D. They get all the, you know, they get all the opportunity because of the schools they go to. But since I was a state school guy, I went to Cal Poly Pomona and Cal State Long Beach. I didn't have that same, I don't know how to call it, not privilege, but just prestige, I guess is the word. So I had to work, you know, I couldn't just rely on me being from some great school or whatever. And, you know, I went to my stepdad, who's, rest in peace, he's a brilliant engineer. He was an engineer for 40 years. He worked for the Navy. He worked for NASA. He graduated college at, like, 16 or something like that. He was a Jewish man, wonderful human being. And he was, you know, he was my sounding board. I would ask him any question, and he always had the right answer. So I went to him, and I said, Dad, you know, I don't think I'm as good as those other kids. You know, they're – you know, there's Stanford, Caltech, MIT, you know, I'm just, you know, a B average kid from Well, remember, I was working full-time while I was going to school, so, you know, so it was hard for me to get – I can get straight A's, but, you know, it's kind of hard when you're, you know, putting in 40 hours and then having to go to school and then having to do the homework, et cetera. So I was always at around at a B average. And he said to me something that, you know, I teach intellectual property law. I taught in Finland and other places. And this is what I tell the kids from the state schools. I tell them, look, this is what my stepdad told me. He said, don't let anybody ever think that they're better than you because of their education or the opportunities that they had in life. In other words, born rich or whatever, you know. He said, you're going to do just fine. And I went to the R&D lab and I did very, very well, very, very well. I designed the first working software-defined radio, which is a radio that can do anything. You know, it's a software programmable radio that can do AM, FM, cellular, you know, military, whatever you want. You just reprogram it. And at Hughes Aircraft, I built the first working version of that. They had the patent on it, but I built the actual architecture for it. And then in 94, Hughes Aircraft laid off half the company. You know, they laid off 40,000 out of 80,000 employees. That was back in 94. Some of you may remember there was a crash. California got hit really, really bad, especially the defense contractors. The contracts dried up and all the companies just started laying off and California got devastated. My house that I had bought in Lancaster for, what did I pay for it? $132,000. It went up to, at one point, $800,000, believe it or not, which I should have sold, you know, but of course I was looking for a place to live. I wasn't trying to make money off of real estate. And then that crash came and I ended up walking on the house and it got foreclosed on for $87,000. So I had 7 years bad luck from that. But, you know, I after that I went to law school and again, you know, this is the reoccurring theme with me. I don't take the easy path. Okay, so I was in California. I was working at Hughes Aircraft. They offered to pay for my law school. Hughes Aircraft said, if you stay here and continue to work on these important projects you're working on, we will pay for your law school. And the nearest law school was Loyola Marymount down there in downtown L.A. And, you know, that's the path of least resistance, right? I can keep my house. I can keep my friends. I can keep my job. I can get paid to go to law school. You know, no brainer, right? As I'm driving to law school for the, you know, they have a little reception where they buy beer and stuff and try to recruit you into the school. As I'm sitting there in that L.A. traffic driving from El Segundo, literally like, I think it's like 5 miles, it took me 45 minutes during rush hour because I was going to be a night student, which means I would have been sitting in that traffic every single night for the next 4 years. And I had just done, you know, 4 years of commuting to Long Beach from El Segundo for my master's degree, sitting in traffic, talk about working full time. After that, driving all the way to Long Beach for an hour, going to class, driving back an hour, studying all night, and then going back and working full time the next day. So, you know, I was done with the commuting. And as I sat there in that traffic, I said, there's nothing that they can say to me that's going to make me take this. And the only other option was going to George Washington University, 3,000 miles away, walking on my house, moving in with my mom with two dogs at 35.
Okay.
With no job. And that's the path I took. You know, I ended up going back to Washington, D.C., no job, whatever. Moved in with my mom and then eventually found, got a job at the patent office and then eventually got a job at a law firm and eventually became a patent attorney. So that was my whole long-winded story. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Carlos, you said something yesterday that sparked some thought on me, and we're going to come to Chris in a moment. You mentioned that you mentioned the term pre-orders. So I said, man, that's a solution I've been looking for, pre-orders. So I came up, just based on you stating that, I came up with like seven different business models. I mean, they're nothing original, but there's the pre-order business model, and I'm looking at you know, the dream, you know, your dream concept, dream project. And these are all proof. These talk about proof of concept. They've all worked. So you got the pre-order business model, the pre-made business model, the live stream business model, and I want to come back to that in a moment, housing on demand business model, meet, greet, eat, and build business model, the happy hour business model, and the brunch and build business out, or business model. Now, let me go, before I go to Chris, live stream, the live stream business model. There are two YouTubers. They're not the only two, but two that I've kept track of for over a year. One is, her name is Angela Desmina. She's a seamstress. She's about 27, 28 years old. She started, and she makes kitty clothes, you know, for infants and toddlers and, you know, people under 4 or 5 years old. She's a young mother. She's got two children herself. But she started making, you know, baby clothes, and she was selling them at a neighborhood flea market on weekends. And then she went online, and I got wind of her. And the primary reason why I follow her is because I'm amazed at the profit she makes and the business revenue she generates from being online with live streams and talk about, you can sort of say what she does is a proof of concept thing. So she'll get online for a live stream, and there's a chat going, and you have people, a lot of them are like young mothers or something like that, and they'll call in and say, I want, you know, baby booties, I want a hat, I want this kind of outfit for my child. She'll take the orders during the live stream, and then she's got a rack of different type of sewing machines and embroidery machines that you can see. Now, since I've been keeping track of her, she's moved to like at least two different houses because she just needed more capacity. She works out of her house. So, you know, the two-car garage is a de facto warehouse and factory and all that. You know, you see her husband in the back. So she'll take these orders, and she'll make these orders where you can see her actually making your order. And then, you know, a day or so, two later, you'll see another video of hers. Now, the live streams are where you see her making whatever the order. Then a day or two later, you'll see her, sometimes 3 days at the latest, you'll see her and her husband, you know, put the stuff in the van or the station wagon or whatever car they're driving, and they'll go to the post office or UPS or FedEx, and then they're mailing off what these people ordered. She does over $1 million a year now doing that. That's
incredible.
Live stream. Right, right. So now the other guy is a rapper, an Asian rapper. He's out of New York City or someplace like that. China Mac. All right. And China Mac, he doesn't make anything, but he's got merchandise, or as they call it online, merch. Baseball hats, hoodies, T-shirts, that type of thing. So he'll do a live stream on YouTube and or whatever visual platform, and he'll just, you know, how do you want, pick out whatever you want. I want this. I want a small, medium, large. I want a T-shirt, baseball hat. I want, you know. So you'll see him. This is out of this dude's spare bedroom, okay? And but he's got it set up like a little warehouse. So he will. This is him personally. I sent him a note. I said, man, get an assistant. But anyway, he takes the order. You know, you see him pick out whatever you ask for online or whatever in a live chat. Then he'll ask them, how do you want me to sign this? He'll sign the way they want to. And then he'll say, all right, I'll mail this out tonight. I'll go to the post office or tomorrow. So that's what he does. Now he might take one or two of those orders that are local, and then he'll go to that person's house. They don't know he's coming. And he'll knock on the door and surprise somebody who ordered from him. And, I was trying to, one of those things like a pimp my ride type thing. So I was thinking, this is all stem, Carlos, when you said pre-order. This, my mind went to working. I was thinking, now, and Chris can come in on this one too. If we, with the way Chris can put something together or teach somebody how to put something together, all right, they can pre-order, in other words, because a pre-order, basically, you're getting money up front to buy the materials, this, that, or the other. And you're taking that money and, you're building a house. So, I mean, we can work out anybody can work out the logistics on that. But all that came from because I brought up, the reason why I came up with these seven distinctions, like one of them was like brunch and bill. Because typically during these live streams, I've known Chris for maybe 2 or 3 weeks now. Chris, if he's away from the phone, he's working on something. Okay.
I'm not, though.
Now imagine people saw him or any one of us, or matter of fact, the clubhouse room, that club, what do you call it? Me and Chris met on, it's called, what's it called? Unleash Your Potential. That day, that morning, there was a guy in there who's homeless. He lives in Roxboro, North Carolina, something like that. Imagine if we got somebody like that, and that we're in their town, or we'll take care of the logistics or whatever. And imagine if they can see somebody like that, or Carlos, your story. Okay, a person might not have to go to law school or engineering school or anything like that, or become a patent attorney, or whatever. But if they can just see, all right, wait a minute, here's a guy, he was homeless just like me. Or, man, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, that's why I call it, the brunch, because when you break bread with people, because this is brunch hours right now, lunch and brunch. And they're in a homeless situation. And Chris can, look, I'm going to walk you through this now. I'm going to teach you how to do this. And then you got people that are donating money or in real time, or maybe they've got, because a lot of people get, these people get money all kind of ways. All right. And if they know that let's say a person is, I'm getting street now, ass out right now. They don't know where they're going to sleep tonight. And they got kids with them. Okay. Chris, the combination of you two, by the time the sun goes down, because the sun sets earlier in the wintertime, will be revolutionary. The raw network that you guys have, from Belize to, God, I don't know. Yeah, we had a guy on here yesterday, Conrad Miller. He lived in Russia for 7 years. So it's and this is ahead, what you guys are talking about. You're a few steps ahead of the government on a big city. And I think a lot of these larger cities will jump on a bandwagon when we have enough little people like us. We can do just like Sam Walton did for Walmart. When they see, oh, wait a minute. Well, they're in 500 locations already. We don't want to be left out. That's how the big city politicians work. But anyway, but that's a whole nother podcast. Anyway, Chris, the ball's in your court. I'm going to step off the court for a minute and let you talk.
Carlos's story, he asked for three things. What are the three things you would ask for in your life? And the one thing I want to see in my life, I want to see people love, not hate. And I would like to see joy on people's faces when I see them, wherever they are. And I would like to see a smile. I'm not asking for much, but I am asking people to think, what is your facial expression? What is your body gesturing? What are you seeing other people do? not about judging anyone. It's not my job in no way, shape, or form to ever judge you. It's your job to judge yourself. And, you know, I've got a story. And I'm not going to tell it because I'm going to share it. I'm going to give it to the world. I'm going to give it to you in sections because I can't write it in one book. There's way too many volumes. So is your life. You know, life is an adventure. An adventure can turn tragic in a moment. In 1 second, your entire life can change. A lot of people's lives have changed in other people's hands. That's how accidents happen. And I know that ain't what you're envisioning in your future. But for me to see people that their minds are being made up by, well, that ain't what I want. What I want is to see your need met. And it doesn't matter. If you're in a disaster, you can count on it. I got a team that's out there that has given their life to save yours, even your animals. It doesn't matter. But you, everything matters. Life matters. What matters to you in life? You know, you're a creator every second of the day. What are you creating? I don't know unless you share it. The thing is people haven't had a voice. And Clubhouse, you know, is a great platform. We're talking about platforms here. Clubhouse has gave people a voice that never had one. I've watched people go from never speaking to a group to being this exceptional light in people's day. Because when you open your eyes, you need light to see. We're not nocturnal, so we don't see in the dark. Because, you know, I had a friend of mine. I told him, I said, you know, I had a feeling if I stopped this vehicle right now, out in the middle of the country with no lights, and me and you got out of the vehicle, and we walked around to the front of it, I couldn't see you. And he said, try it. So I did. And I could not see him. He could not see me. You know, I had another prolific thing happen, and there's multiple stories to this one story. But it was how I don't like a no. I don't take a no very well. But here I was walking through a city. I didn't have my driver's license at the time. And I got a pair of shorts on, no shirt, and I'm trying to find work. And I'm in the poorest county in the state. And I'm like, I see this church getting done, getting drywalled. They're hanging it. And they're remodeling it. You know, it's already there, but it's doing a remodel. And they're doing some very intricate things. And I walked in, and I said, man, I said, I'm a professional drywaller. I said, I could really help you, you know, do this job. I can, you know, help you guys get out of here quicker. I said, I could use the work. And the guy looked at me, and he said no. And I know that I could outperform everybody that's up there working because I've got more knowledge and more expertise at this than they did because they're carpenters. And I went home, put on a shirt, put on a pair of pants, and I went back. And I said, man, I could really help you. And I said, and I just can't stand the thought that I live a block away and there's work here and I'm not able to do it. And I could help you. And he says, all right, tell me how much. And I said, what do you want me to do? And he started walking me through it. But needless to say, I went to work. 2 days later, something unbelievable happened. I'm three scaffolds up in the air working on an arch. And all these guys are real religious. And this young guy, the youngest one there, he says, there's a storm outside. And it is such a storm, you wouldn't believe what's going on. And he said, you know, it'd be a heck of a time for the lights to go out. And when I heard that key, I could not see. I'm standing on top of a platform, three scaffolds up, and I'm just freeze. And I'm like, uh-oh. So I start to go down to where I can touch the platform. And because there's no sides. And then I hear him, and he says, well, now it's too dark for me to get down. And there's a steel door. And this door, you had to work it to get it open. We were changing out the door. It's an emergency exit door. But it wasn't a very good exit door. And this door slams open. Right through the metal casing and all. Just slams open. And no one was around it. No one could get to it. Even if you were on the ground, you could not see the hand in front of your face. It was so dark. But when the door flung open, we could see. There was enough light. We climbed down, and we walked over to that door, all of us. And there was a tree. All of us took our arms and put it around this tree, and we did not connect. That's how big it was. And it was laying on the ground. Right next to this building, right next to this door. And none of the other trees in town were done this way. It was done right here. And when we shut the door, you could see all the way to the back of the sanctuary. On the top of the, you could see everything. There was no darkness. Just because the door was closed, and when this happened, it turned off all of our sight. And the guy that runs the place that gave me the job, he says, and everybody was just looking at each other because we're all looking, and we can see everything. We can see everything. Doesn't matter where it's at, you can see it. And he says, I think we're going to go home. And we do. Trees on the other side of the church in the parking lot were down and on the ground. And we all go home. And the next morning, I come in. And actually, wait a minute. I went home. First thing in the morning. This just happened. It happened on 9/11. And I happened to be sitting watching live what was going on. Now, I normally wouldn't be there, but something brought us out of there. The next morning, I asked him, or I went to work, and he goes, hey, Chris, I've been waiting on you to get here. I want to ask you something. I said, good, I want to ask you something. Something profound happened yesterday. And he says, well, I wanted to ask you if you and your family would like to come to church with us on Sunday. We're having an ice cream social. We'll come by and pick you up, bring you back home. And I'm like, you know, I was coming in here to ask you if I could go to church with you Sunday. And the thing is my son was sick prior to that. For 6 months out of his life, he was congested, stopped breathing. And he wasn't at this time. He was healthy. But it was because of a man named Bud Montgomery. And he was running the Habitat stuff in that county, in Franklin County, Illinois. And he's from West Frankfort. But I told him I had to take my son to the children's hospital. And he asked me if he could, at his prayer group at 7 o'clock, pray for my son. And I told him, I said, the doctors don't know what's wrong. I said, so I will take anything. And I'm down there, had all these tests done on my son. Winds up, I'm eating a meal down in the cafeteria from Dairy Queen that I couldn't even afford to buy, but I needed to eat something. And I got him in the car carrier, and I'm getting ready to take a bite, and I look down, and I see blood running out of his eye, and it's running down his face. But it's not going anywhere. But his eye was blood red. And I immediately took off running up three flights of stairs. I didn't wait on an elevator. And when I ran into the doctor's office, they could see this. But they were like, where's the blood? It's not, there's nothing on any of the blankets or anything. It's disappearing on his cheek. And it's like 2:30 in the afternoon. And I turn around, 3 o'clock, somewhere in there. And I come home, went to sleep. I hadn't slept in 6 months because I listened for him to stop breathing so I could suck his throat out. And the thing is, and I realized it when I got to the job and that man was standing there. And he said, Chris, we didn't wait till 7 o'clock. We were together at 2 and we were praying till 3. I ran home. He chased me in the car, but I ran straight in a straight line home. And I noticed that my son wasn't congested anymore. And so, you know, one thing that I've always known is we're an energy source. And people have put their positive energy toward this. And, you know, our brains are so powerful, we can't comprehend it. So we don't try to. Now, here I am, I walk into this church, and I go down this hallway, and I turn to the left, and the open doors to the sanctuary, and there sat Bud Montgomery. And it wasn't the church I was working on, it was the church that asked me to go to. But this is the church that was praying for my son, when no one else had an answer. So it doesn't matter what your education is, on what your abilities are. So I was on my knees and I couldn't walk. I never made it to him other than being on my knees crawling. And I don't understand the overwhelmingness that hit me. But at the same time, it's made me who I am. But I will land my plane right there. I've been talking for a moment, so...
Okay, we got a, let's see. Ooh, they disappeared. We had somebody from 410 area code, but they dropped off the radar. Chris, if they're still listening, this person will get you in now. Or anybody, if you're already in the queue, just press one of their comments, suggestions, ideas, what have you. Chris, now, let's say the building, give us an example of a tiny house, square footage, something that can be assembled, let's say in a day or less, or within a day, let's say an 8-hour period of time.
Okay, in an 8-hour period of time, you know, we could stand up a 1,500 square foot house with one person that knows what they're doing and the other three learning. So as far as a tiny house, you know, it's meeting the need. So we've got 120 square foot called a stat, superior to a tent. It comes with a bathroom. It can be hooked up to your city sewer and water, or it could be off-grid completely. But it does come with solar. You know, we want that. We want you to have what you don't have, and that way we'll have what we want. And this is the key thing. So you can build anything you want to build. You know, I took a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old, and they'd never constructed anything in their life. but they put something together. It was 100 square feet, but it had a queen-size bedroom that added another 64 square feet to it. So it was 164 square feet of living space, and they built that in 2 hours. They had never touched it, never knew nothing about it. And, you know, the one thing about the metal is when you have to cut it with a saw, it makes the edges sharp. And they will bite you. So you have to be aware, you know, but you have to pay attention. But you don't have to be in a hurry. So we don't cut things with a saw. It's done with a punch. And it shears it. And it's not a sharp point. There's 2 points on this thing that are sharp, but you don't ever have to touch them. You don't even have to put your hand on them to do this. And part where we want to show people how being responsible, hand-eye coordination, how things are so important. But it comes down to, you know, what your capabilities are. You know, you might take you 3.5 hours to build that frame. But if it did, how long is it going to last now? You just did something in 3.5 hours that'll last your lifetime and 1,000 other people's lifetime. This is the difference of being intentional, ordering it. Make, if you got a problem and you guys want to claim it, that's what it is. It's about claiming a problem. You know, we can show you. I can only lead people to water. I can't make them drink it. Same thing with a horse. You know, it doesn't matter. You can try shoving their head in it all you want, but you're not going to force them to do anything. If you are, that's kind of what we're doing now. We're forcing people to do without because we're not claiming it. These problems are ours. If you guys heard the song from Disturbed, and it's Bill Collins' song, Genesis, but Land of Confusion, these are our hands that we're given. There's so many people causing problems and not enough love to go around. I love that song, and I asked him to play it. I was hoping that I didn't miss the Phil Collins version of it, and he just told me that he didn't get the chance to play it this week because I was late to the podcast the other day. But I was late because I was doing it, not because I didn't want to be here. I was here, but I wasn't because everyone else was here. Carlos was here. I was here. That was it. I didn't need to be here for me to be here. Because he's representing it. He's doing it. And that's why we're here. This is Black Friday. Let's sell some houses. You want a deal? Let's deal. How many do you want? How many people out there will step up? Step up. Be the change you want to see. That's what I want for you and me. I want it to be clear, not clouded. There is a bright sunshine in our life, but we have to bring life to life. We need to stop the stress. Stop worrying about money. Realize you're spending money today, and I partnered with everybody you're spending money with, and you could be getting cash back, and we could be getting a donation. Are you truly thankful? Are you thankful now? Now you know something. Reach out. HopeForHousing.org. Call the phone number, 309-542-6319. Reach out. You can email me, Steelman, and that's steel, not trying to steal something. It's because it's strong. But Steelman, BLM, Boy Larry Mary. Don't get it wrong. It's the abbreviation of Bloomington, Illinois. It's where I'm at. Not where I want to be. It's not where I call home. I'm not home. And I won't be home until other people have their home. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to hit the road. It's up to you on where I go. And it's up to you on what we will show so many people that you are the answer to our despair. as we go into the light and we prepare for a future for mankind. And leave it all behind. Don't think about and bring back and make happen what happened yesterday. You're the human race. We're human beings, and we're not being human. Is it time? Is it your time? I can never get anyone to hear a message they're not ready to receive, but never underestimate the power of planting a seed. I'm planting seeds right now. I planted a seed 17 years ago. It showed up with roots, with branches, and it was bearing fruit to help thousands of people in Houston. Never underestimate power of planting a seed. But let's start planting these seeds and let's stop the hunger. This is Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. Let's be aware. Let's claim it. And I can't wait to stare you in the eye and know what we did, because I'll never forget it, because it's a memory and it's true. So I'll stop there.
You just planted a seed with, because it's Black Friday, and there's ultra mass consumption happening all throughout the United States. But how many people will be building or producing housing today? Maybe not today, but by this time next year on Black Friday, how many houses will we be building on Black Friday of 2023?
Let's call it next Friday.
12 months goes by relatively fast, huh?
I said, let's call it next Friday.
You know what?
Every Friday, this is the challenge. You know, somebody can make a phone call. Somebody knows somebody that can make something happen. There's a church out there that has a piece of land. There is time for us to make a stand. Right now, today, somebody out there, I'll put a challenge to you. I'll bring the material Friday after next. So 2 weeks.
Okay.
Gives you time to prepare, pull your permit, and I'll show up.
Friday after now. I'm writing this down on my phone right now. Friday after next. Friday after next. Now,
I got to be in Miami week for Art Basel, so I can't claim next week that I'll be there on Friday, because I'm going to be at the largest art festival in the country. But I'm going to be sharing digital artwork. I'm going to be sharing green building. We'll be doing keynote speaking at a sustainable situation. It is time. It's time for everybody to claim it. And I'm making my stand. I was asked to do this with not much notice, but it's time for you to notice. I'm traveling from Illinois to Miami. I can wherever I go from that point is totally up to you.
Okay. I'm putting this stuff on my phone. I like that. Well, all right, let's get into some logistics here. Okay, let's say somebody is interested in doing a build Friday after next, or next Friday, because those are two different different business models. I mean, fundamentally they're the same, but so if a person wanted to put up and let's use Carlos's carport project that he's done himself, DIY backyard project. What materials would we need? And let's just deal with the carport first, and then we'll go to the tiny house example after that. So, Carlos, what materials would we need? Matter of fact, if we wanted to do a build next Friday, what kind of materials would we need? Tools, materials, and ballpark figure cost.
Yes. So you know, the reason I'm excited about partnering with Chris, that we partnered together, is that he has the machines that can crank out the steel frames, I think, much cheaper than purchasing a carport. And, you know, the way I did it is probably way, way, way more expensive because of the fact that I just purchased everything from like Amazon or Home Depot, right?
Okay.
So that carport in the backyard that I built, I think altogether was around, I don't know, around $6,500 investment. That's for the carport, the gravel, all the stuff. However, it takes time to ship this stuff, right? In other words, I had to order the grow media from one company and et cetera, et cetera. So getting everything there that quickly probably is not practical because I don't, you know, we would have to order everything and make sure it's in stock. And, of course, with COVID, I think shipping costs have gone through the roof. So who knows what the price is now, you know, with everything increasing like that. But yeah, you know, it would probably take at least, I would say, a few weeks to get all the material to a location. But it's, you know, I built it with just really nothing, just basic tools like screwdriver, you know, saw, tape. So the version that I built is basically a carport that's anchored to it's a freestanding solution. And it's basically a 10x20 carport that is anchored to the ground by putting the carport through these plastic shelving units that are also 1-inch. They have 1-inch holes in every corner. So what I do is I anchor the carport at each corner with the shelving units, and then I take the remaining shelves of the shelving units and make an entire floor out of it. And then after that, we would take the pea gravel and pour it all over the plastic trays, you know, to cover it up. So now you've got a pretty heavy, you know, because I think each bag of pea gravel is, I don't know, like 40, 50 pounds or something like that. So, you know, now you're talking about a structure that's weighted down pretty well. In other words, the carport is now not going anywhere, right? After that, you want to add the ThermaShield and the triple pane polycarb. So it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of work, you know, but I built it now that I know how to build it. With a couple of hands and the right tools, like I said, just basic tools, saws, drills, you know, super basic tools. I could probably build one now that I know how to build it in probably about 8 hours or so.
Okay.
Which is a long time.
I'm listening.
But what we want to do, and this is what we're working towards right now, is I want to adapt. Or we want to adapt the design I have in my backyard to Chris's methodology because it'll be way simpler, right? In other words, if Chris can crank out erector pieces that generate what I did in my backyard, I can also fix some of the design errors. For example, on a 10x20 carport with a 6-foot wide fish tank is what I have, which is a jacuzzi. I can't get around. It's very difficult. I can't get around one side of the grow beds, the ones on the sun side. There's no room to get around. They're right up against the triple pane polycarb. And on the other side, I've got about a foot that I got to squeeze through, you know, to get around the system. Because the system, picture a rectangle with a circle in the middle. And in that circle, you have grow beds all around it. So with Chris, what we would do is we would probably make it instead of a 10x20, it would probably be a 14x20 structure so that now you've got 2 feet on either side of the grow beds to walk around. It would also give you some extra room. And by the way, the version I built is a hobby version. It's something that you could hang out in. You could, you know, it's sort of like where I go to meditate and things like that. However, with Chris's technology, we could optimize it for either hobby, you know, like somebody that wants to go and relax in their backyard and in the greenhouse, or we can configure it for production. In other words, just food production. Two different designs. Food production, you're going to have plants, space, fish tank, space, mushrooms. You know, you got to maximize the amount of food you can cram in that tiny little space because you're trying to maximize food production. On my model, I wasn't concerned about maximizing food production. I just wanted a place that I could go and meditate and you know, be with, you know, enjoy the enjoy nature and grow some food and, you know, make myself an omelet or whatever. Long-winded answer, but yes, we can build the one in my backyard. The price, I haven't priced. Last time I did the price list, I think was around 4 months ago. Who knows what prices are right now? I have a mini greenhouse that I built. That's for again something you can build yourself. You know, when I first built it, like I don't know, a year ago, all the parts were like I don't know something like $150 or something like that. I just priced them recently, and the parts are now up to $250. So you know that's the issues. But the reason why I'm very excited to adapt what I'm doing to the way Chris is doing it, because to have something you could bolt together really quickly that's already pre-cut. Chris also said that he can make the tank, he can make everything that goes into the greenhouse, the whole aquaponic system, using metal and maybe a pond liner or something like that. So now we have a way of building it bulletproof to our own custom design or to the design of a customer. So what I would propose is that, you know, if somebody is interested in the greenhouse I have in my backyard, you know, I can give you the parts list, whatever, and there's videos that I've made that show you how I built the one that I have. But I think right now we're taking pre-orders for versions that are built using Chris's manufacturing technology. And right now we just need to do the design. We need to adapt what I've done to what Chris has done. Which is, you know, we're working as fast as we can, but it's going to take a little bit of time to do that. But Chris right now could start delivering the tiny homes, right? And the way we want to do it anyways is we want to have the greenhouse separate from the tiny home for lots of reasons. The greenhouse gets, you know, has plants, mushrooms, so it's going to have insects and things like that. And by keeping the tiny home separate from the greenhouse, now you don't have to worry about, you know, additional steps, you know, of living inside of a greenhouse with, you know, fish, plants, mushrooms, and, you know, bees and worms and everything else that you know, is in nature. So what I would propose is that we get a tiny house project going, right? And in that same location, you know, we could do two different workshops. One workshop could be to come in and do the tiny home. And then, you know, by that time, we'll have the greenhouse designed. And then we can come in and do another workshop just for the greenhouse. That's, you know, I'm just thinking out loud right now. Thank you. Okay.
Well, I'm gonna play this audio. We'll be back in 2 minutes, and we're going to take off from where you just stopped off.
Say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back out the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, "What y'all finna do?" He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house.
That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
All right, the question I have is Chris and Carlos. Chris, I think I sent you some pictures. I'll send them again if I didn't. I've got 4 acres here. It's 3 hours away from me, but it's all in Florida. 4 acres, and Carlos, I'll send you the pictures too. And right where I'm at right now, which is in another location, I'm in between Tampa and Orlando. I got a nice-sized backyard because I'm on a bit. I'm on a little bit over a quarter acre of land. Of course, I got a house on and all that stuff. But it's got a nice size backyard where I can build something. So my question to both of you is, because I'm looking at, I've got 9 friends, and everybody's got 9 friends, one way or another. Even if you think you don't have 9 friends, you can get online. You can get on Facebook some kind of way and get you 9 friends. So my question is, Chris and Carlos, and I'll ask Chris first, and then we'll go to Carlos. How long would it take us to put up a tiny house with 9 friends?
An hour.
I love it. Carlos, how fast can you put up a carport or that greenhouse, whatever we need to do? If we got 9 friends,
I'll answer.
In actuality, in that audio, realistically, now they probably had about, I'm going to say conservative, they had 9 pickup trucks. So I'm figuring you got the driver and there was at least one other person. So that makes it, 18 people, bare minimum. So I'm looking at, I got 9 to 18 friends. If I don't have them, put me out in the desert somewhere. I'll get, if I got an internet connection, I'll find me 9 to 18 friends quick. Particularly if I'm feeding them. Okay. So, and food doesn't cost that much, at least where I'm going to get it from.
Having that many friends, what I would say is let's not build one. If you're going to show up for an hour and you got 18 friends that are going to show up with you, you know, we could probably build 3 in an hour. 2 hours, because we're probably going to bull crap and enjoy ourselves afterwards. Let's just call it a 2-hour meeting.
Does that include all the other stuff, like the drywall, electrical, everything, or just the
frame? No. We're talking about – hold it. All right. Here's where I'm at with Carlos. And we can hash a lot of this stuff out in Clubhouse later. But I'm looking at when you hear me speak, I'm the extreme of the extreme. I'm an off-the-grid guy. So I'm talking about something, because the 4 acres I have down here, and Chris, we can talk about that early tomorrow morning, about mid-morning, you know, between, you know, I'm not going to talk about it on there, but, you know, good. Like the 4 acre, man, like say, I got Carlos. If you text me or give me your email, not email, a phone where I can text you at, then I'll send you the pictures before it gets to. And Chris and Carlos, I'll send you a picture of my backyard. So I'm talking about, all right, for my example, that's crazy me. All right, there are other people that they have their own thing, but I'm talking about something that is totally off the grid. We're not tapping into the grid for electricity or water, none of that. I'm just talking about because I know how to do sanitation systems and watering systems and the electrical systems for using solar. So I'm just talking about, you know, a basic cabin, okay? Or in the case now with your greenhouse, something that's just basic, is not hooked up to anything. Or the greenhouse, it's totally standalone. So we can take the simplest out of any of those three examples and then run from there. Because, like I say, based on, I'll get 918 friends. My magnet, my marketing magnet is food. I'll invite people out for a pizza, beer and pizza, or soda and pizza, whatever. There'll be some type of food. Keep them fed.
I'll
keep them
there,
happy.
Brother.
We break bread. So,
I'll be there.
Okay. So, because see, what I'm looking at, I'm looking at the vision that you have, I mean, for the projects, the carport, everything you've talked about, Carlos, along with what Chris is talking about, okay, is, and what I like about Chris is his efficiency. No, it's not going to take 2 to 3 weeks to put up a shed in somebody's backyard. Come on. So,
We could easily put up what I have in my backyard and, like, between you and I did it with myself and my two kids, okay, because I had nobody else to help me. And we were working probably about, I don't know, a few hours a night. And, of course, I was designing as I was going, right? In other words, it's like building an airplane as you're flying it, you know, so it takes longer when you're doing that. However, now that it's built, if I had everything on your site, right, we could knock it out. I don't know. I'd be surprised if it took longer than 8 hours just to put everything together now that I know how it goes, you know.
If you had everything laid out in advance, because by the time the workers get there, stuff has to be, you know, ready to go. So I'm not going to go with 18. I'm going to stick with the 9 friends. So we got 9 friends.
That might be too many people, because I think at a certain point, people just kind of get in the way.
Right.
I would say probably 4 people would be more than enough to knock it out.
Well, you know what? If we have 9, if we have 9, 4 will be doing the work, and making sure that we have refreshments, you know, snacks, food, drink. That's what they do, or they're gophers.
Okay.
But – because, like I said, we're all thinking out loud here. So, because what I'm going for is proof of concept. I already know it works. You know, I'm just saying this. This is because
you can look at my
videos. Here is where. go ahead, I'm listening.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, the proof of concept is 11 years operational in my backyard. Just today, I went to my YouTube channel. And I pulled all the short videos, you know, the ones that are less than whatever, and they're vertical, because I started a Dream Habitat TikTok channel, okay?
Right.
And right now I'm getting ready to upload, like, I don't know, like 30 videos that I already had done, because I've documented everything from day one. So anyways, I think 4 hours we could have fun. I would love to build it now. Now that I know how I want to build it, you're getting me excited, as you can probably tell.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, like I say, I guess on Clubhouse later today or we can hash out all those details. Let's see. Hold it. Wait a minute. I just got a note from Jesus, somebody. Chris, you sent me a note. I'm trying to find it. Right?
He probably texted you my phone number. He probably texted you my
phone number. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right. You know what? That's what he did. Okay. So you're already on here. All right. Now, you guys will be, what, down in the Miami area, what, next week or something like that? When is that art fair?
I'm leaving for, a friend of mine is driving me down there. We're taking a truck. We're going to film it, you know, so we'll have some good content heading down to Art Basel to meet Chris. And it's the 29th through the 3rd or something like that. I believe that's – we're going to get there on the 28th and set up our stuff. And then I believe the actual start is like – I want to say December 1st. I know Chris is talking on December 2nd. And I know it ends on December 3rd. So actually I think it's December 1st through 3rd. It's called the Fridge Art Festival, F-R-I-D-G-E, Art Festival, if you want to look it up. And that's where we'll be. Chris is bringing a tiny home, and we're going to be setting art around it. And, you know, we've got artists that have contributed art to sell towards a portion of the sales are going to go towards Green Habitat, Hope for Green Habitat project. So I'm leaving this Sunday. Wow, I'm leaving Sunday to start driving down to Florida. So we'll be boots on the ground.
Yes, that's – how many drivers are you going to have in the car?
It's just myself and my good friend Doug Sanford, a professional photographer. He's got a big truck, and we're going to load the art in there. I'm bringing a sleeping bag, you know, because we're doing it like Burning Man style, you know, low budget.
No, that's on my list, man. I got to get to Burning Man. I've heard so much about it. I've heard Burning Man now isn't the way it was in the early days. But I heard that's a great experience.
I want to mention something. There's also what they call regional burns. Regional burns are associated with Burning Man, but they happen all over the United States. Like, we have a regional burn in West Virginia. It's coming up, by the way.
Uh-huh.
It's called Frost Burn. It's on Marvin's Mountain, on top of a mountain. Freezing cold. And this is what I love about the burners. We can survive in the desert and in the tundras. And in fact, we thrive in the deserts and tundras. I'm talking like, you know, food, bars, movie, you know, like everything. And it's just incredible that everything gets built and put down and no trace is left behind. That's part of the ethos is leave no trace, pack it in, pack it out. There's regional burns. Frost burn, a lot of people don't like to go to it because it's freezing cold, you know, but I love it. I love the extreme environments. I don't know why.
I don't know. I haven't been. Cooler climates. Yeah, I like colder climates more than warmer climates. Well, I don't know, but it. I don't know. When I was in Southeast Asia, man, I was drinking like 8 liters of water a day to stay hydrated in that place. Because I just wasn't used to that type of heat.
You know, we have Love Burn is in Florida. So the people that don't like the cold, they go to Love Burn, and it's really posh. You know, they got incredible art. It's, you know, incredible. I like the rougher ones, you know, like out in the woods and, you know, the desert. And that's just me, you know.
In fact,
I want to take some survival courses and stuff with some of them.
Okay. And Robin's not here. Robin, she hasn't been on the last couple of weeks. She's one of my partners. One of the business models that we need to plan around this is that's why I mentioned earlier China Mac and the Jasmina lady, who's a seamstress, is if people can see in a live stream where it's interactive, you know, actual, I mean, just going from scratch, building or assembling something, that, I mean, I haven't seen, I mean, just the amount of business revenue that can be generated from that. And it's a great teaching, real-time teaching tool as well. But that's got to all be set up out. You know, that part of it too, because she has a, I guess her system is simple, but because she's got a camera, but you can see her. I guess she's got somebody that, you know, doing a live stream, so you can see her moving around, and you can see her, you know, getting the material, cutting the material, you know, preparing it to go on the machines. So, you know, we had the same thing with Chris. We had to have somebody that knows how to Chris knows how to do the technical work on the building part or the assembly part, but we need somebody that, I guess, photographer or somebody that knows, you know, how we can film a live event. That way people can see clearly, you know, what's going on.
My friend Doug, the photographer, would probably want to help. But I think Chris also has some people on Clubhouse that want to do like a documentary or something like that.
Okay.
You know, of our travels and what we're doing and how we're trying to help people and, you know, the building of the greenhouses. I think Chris mentioned that, right, Chris, that you had somebody, I believe, that was interested
in. I know he's got an event planner in his network. I know he's got an event planner, so he'll probably need their help as well.
Yeah, this could be really interesting, you know, because, you know, I really like the concept of, you know, boots on the ground, building stuff in real time. I think it's brilliant, L.A. I love the way you think, you know, and, you know, I'm an engineer and an inventor, you know, and on the business stuff, I don't enjoy it. I don't know how else to put it. I just don't enjoy, I like inventing. I'm an engineer. That's what I like to do. But we need everybody, right? We need your brain.
Well, you're going to need a team.
Collaboration.
Right. Some things you can do solo. Like, essentially, well, I started off as a lone wolf and did a lot of things as a lone wolf. But one of the, like, for instance, right at the beginning of the pandemic, I had 40 more acres of land. I've got about 14, 15 acres now in three states. But I had to let 40 acres go. And the reason why I had to let it go is because I realized as easy as it is to purchase rural land, and it's probably easier to purchase 100 to even 1,000 acres of land. It's real easy to do. You can do it all in less than 30 minutes, trust me. But here's the thing. You're going to need help. You can't manage. You can only manage so much by yourself. So I'm at the stage right now where, okay, you know what? I've done as much as I can do solo. It's best to share it, because if you don't share it, you lose it. So that's where I'm at right now. That's where you have to form, and that's why I played the Nine Friends thing. You have to form a wolf pack, and you do. I have my lane. My lane is finding legal friendly acreages of land. That's my lane, okay? And then I have to team up with people that can help me put, you know, the legal structure in these areas. But I know where to find the land where you don't have to worry about the government being on your back. That's my lane.
Yes.
Now, there are other people that Chris has his lane. You have your lane. One of my partners, my social media partners, Robin Maven, she'll probably be on here next week. Robin, she's a mass media person, particularly with social media, the audio as well as the visual. That's her lane. So now Chris, I think last week, he had an event planner on a private call that we did last week, conference call. I'm not an event planner. So, you know, we have to put that in their lane. So it's a matter of putting together a team. And we got all the raw material because, I mean, the guy from Belize, he's got 100 acres where he's at. That's his lane. So it's just a matter of putting the appropriate people together in teams and then making it go.
That's right. It takes a team to make the dream. And dream work makes the team work. So see, you just took two words and you turned them and they both had positive things because you needed to know the one to know the other.
Right.
And, you know, everything that we do here, every thought that we're going to have today is all yours. And, you know, one thing I like about LA here, you know, he's so intentional. And that is a beautiful trait in being human, because this man is being human, because he's giving you him for free every mm-hmm. day. And his knowledge and his resources, and just to help you. Because I ain't heard him ask for nothing.
No, I haven't either.
And that's
well, let me share this. Let me share this. I've been waiting, and Chris and I met, like, say, on Clubhouse at 7 o'clock in the morning. I was just in the room because that's one of the ways I start my day. Okay. And then the host was in that room. You know, we were both in the same room, and she introduces, and then I invited him on for one interview that's going on every day, but I'm getting a lot. I'm waiting. I got into this renewable energy stuff. My background is I'm an urban dude, okay, Washington, D.C., and then 25 years ago, it's 2020. Let's say 30 years ago, I had all mirrors, you know, on the Rolls Royce or Bentley or something like that. When I went over to Europe, and then that got me into sustainability and renewable energy and how to get rid of your utility bills and all that. That was just revel. It was like I was like boot under the boat out tree. That's the kind of experience and enlightenment I had over there. Then I came back over here, and I did quite a bit of volunteer work. But I haven't, and now I do have a mentor out of Chicago. He's having health problems at the time. He's up in age. We came on the same page with solar, but when it comes to the specifics, like patent, you know about patents, trademarks, and all that. You know about sustainability. Chris knows about building. I've been waiting over 20 years to meet you two here in the United States. I'll put it that way.
I have
20 years.
17 years. 17 years I've been on this mission. And, you know, for us to cross paths. And we crossed paths and we hit a crossroad and you opened a door for me that I don't want to close. So I'm here. I try to be intentional just like you every day of what I do. And this is where we can enlighten people and give them a clue. And all that.
Because even the go ahead, Carlos.
I was going to say I was just adding up the numbers, right? LA, you said you've been doing this podcast for 9 years, I believe. Chris,
it'll be 9 years next month. Yeah, 9 years next month.
Years next month. Chris has been working on this stuff for, you said, 15 years, Chris, if I recall. I've been 17 years. I've been looking to find you guys for 11 years. I mean, think about the amount of time, you know, I wonder what that adds up to. Not that it matters, but, you know, it's just interesting you mentioned that, you know, that we have been on the same mission, and we just haven't, you know, we just never connected until now. And you know what? Now is the perfect time, because now is the time we connected. You know, everything we were doing was leading us to this point. So, you know, I feel blessed that we you know, that our paths have crossed and that we're going to do really, really incredible things. You know, we're getting contacted by eco villages. You know, there's Indian reservations. There's the homeless problem. There's the vet problem. There's so much good that we can do, and I'm just tickled pink. I don't know how else to put it. Thank you.
Yeah, the closest that I came to meeting somebody like that to think the way you guys would be, and with my regular listeners, we got some pretty interesting people with that, but would be the Soul Decathlon. And, you know, and I haven't done that in a while, but I did three of them. They usually held those every other year. Or when I was, but the Soul Decathlon is like college kids, and they got to raise a lot of money. And a lot, you know, they got to raise a lot of money because they got to take care of lodging and all this other stuff wherever they have that exhibit. But like I said, I did quite a bit of volunteer work, Green Fest or whatever, and it's unless I jump on a plane and go back to Europe someplace or some remote but this in the United States, I'm going to look at it just like Walmart, or there's like I say, if you want to look into the future, look in the rural area, or now this is the beauty of Carlos. And we're going in overtime as we always do. So, Pianca, we're going to come to you in a minute. If you look in somebody's backyard, like Carlos, you can look into the future. Look, everything we can think of that we're surrounded by today was in somebody's head. It was somebody had an idea, and they worked it out on their kitchen table, their garage, their backyard. So, I mean, Apple computers. Two guys, one not wearing shoes all the time. I think that was Jobs. You know, some might have considered him eccentric during his early years until he got rich. All right. Uber rich. But they were out of their garage. You know, Michael Dell with Dell Computers. This guy was, I think he was operating out of his college dorm room. All right. So, there's this guy, he's passed over now. The guy who started Subway sandwiches. All right. He didn't invent Subway sandwiches, but he just had an idea on, you know what? I can franchise this idea. Now, when he passed away, he left his family, the DeLuca Family Trust. You know, it's just worth billions of dollars just off of a sandwich that he didn't even invent. So it's we'll have more backyard people on here for next year and everything. But anyway, but like I say, we've all been waiting, so now's our time. Let's see. Let's go to the phone lines right now. 314 area code. Your mic is open.
You know, I've been listening to you guys talking. I've come up with three things. One, you want some free towel and help for nothing. Two, you say you've been working 20 years when you can just open the yellow pages and find who and what you want. And three, you don't have no money. We going to get these things built.
I disagree with that.
Which one?
Social capital. No, listen. Social capital can be converted into money.
That's counterfeiting.
I disagree. Respectfully, I disagree. Wait a minute. It's a distinction between simple and easy. It's simple and it might not be easy, depending on the mental state of person that you're talking to.
That's why I say you go to the yellow pages, you got people that's advertising with the skills and talents that you look for. You ain't got to wait for them to come walking down the road. Man, I put up bridges. I put up 40-story office buildings. And would have been at the 20th floor by now from the beginning of these conversations. Get the job done. The longer talk about it, material costs is going up. You can call any labor hall to get all the help you want. You got to pay for it. It ain't going to be free. And then, too, you got all these people out there working free. So if somebody get hurt, who's going to pick up their liability? Don't think they're going to say, oh, man, my arm is cut off, but since me and you friends, I ain't going to charge you nothing.
Well, let's look at it this way, Bianchi. We see something that you don't see. And at this stage of the game, you're not supposed to see it. As long as we can see it, that's all that counts.
Wait a minute. Have you ever done it before? You know, you can't draw a picture of a hippopotamus if you never seen one.
Hang on then. All right, let me just give you a little story then, so that way you know and you got more facts, because we haven't spoke that and you don't know. So I'm going to here you go. In 2006, I built a 2,500-square-foot home right where the eye came across for Hurricane Katrina. I tried to get all the recycling material from Katrina, but Mayor Nagin wanted $250 million for it. So it's still not rebuilt. 2007, I worked on a project to get incentives for you to build green, and they'll pay up to $54,000 to $56,000 a year mortgage in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, if you build green after their flood. In 2009, I built a commercial building, left it open from October of 2009 to May of 2010 through the Midwest winter with no roof and no siding on it to prove that I could, because if it was made out of wood, it would have had to have been tore down. In 2010, I went to Nashville, and I showed 25 people how to get a home in 30 minutes or less. And I asked them to go show 25 people what I just showed them. They were already working on their houses for a week, hadn't put a dent in this problem. But working together, putting 50 hands, doing one thing, and that's getting it done. In order, they were able to show themselves that they could do 14 homes from 8 o'clock to 12 o'clock. So they beat the 30-minute deadline. Then they turned around. And I asked them, go show 25 people what I just showed you. They showed up by the tens of thousands at lunchtime. They lived up to the volunteer state. And Nashville, you would never know, was underwater. Now, I want you to look at every disaster prior to Nashville and every disaster after Nashville, and you're going to get the proof of concept and where I've been and what I've done. Now, this ain't been about me. This has been about we. Now, in Nashville, we got 17,000 homes in 60 days, and it was all done by volunteers, and it was all done the same way. That's because one person went into an infected area with the right knowledge and didn't ask for anything in return but a favor. He didn't even know who I was because I was there anonymously, because it wasn't about me. There was people that was tracking me because I got a congressional endorsement when I built the Greenest Built Home in 2011, and it was hand-delivered by a congressman to Obama in 2011 in the Oval Office. And in that letter, it says, Chris has created, I don't know why I didn't want my name on it, but it was, Chris has created a way to give the homeless homes and the jobless jobs. I'm not here trying to give a hand out. I'm trying to give a hand up. Now, I lost my machine to vandalism in 2011, right after I got that letter. But I was going to rebuild a tornado when they, the news, it's been all covered. I mean, you can find the footage. It's out there. There are stories. It's been going for a long time. I've been doing it since the despair started when I was sitting there, walked away from profit in 2005 because of greed. I had a greedy partner that he felt that what I earned, he was more in need than I was to have even a part of it, because he made a comment, and he was right, because I didn't have credit, but I had an ability. So I went to this partner and I asked him, you pay my payroll and I don't ever have to worry about chasing a check. I'll go make money. And I put 70 people to work. Now, when I put $1 million in the bank, he says, you know this company's in my name, right? And I said, you know this company's in my head, right? He says, that's awful grandiose, don't you think? And I said, no, sir, this is grandiose. I said, you can quit your job and hire two other motherfuckers, and the three of you can't do mine because I've never wrote nothing down. You don't know who I work for, what jobs I got going, who I need to collect from. You have no idea. And the only thing I came here with was my phone number and me. And I'm leaving with them right now. And in 30 days, you're going to close the door. And it's
all right, I got a question.
Go ahead.
It sounds like to me that the material you're going to need for this is $40,000. Who's got $40,000 of material? Step forward. L.A., you got $40,000 cash?
Yeah, Pianki, man, you're saying Michael Scott.
No, you got to have the material.
No, Pianki, the only resource that I hear coming out of your mouth is M-O-N-E-Y, money legal tender. There are several types of financial resources available.
Let me say something. My payroll on one job was $200,000 a week. You got to have money. Ain't nobody going to be doing stuff free forever.
You got to have resources.
You got to have resources.
The resources don't have to
be. You got resources.
Money.
All you got to do is open up the Yellow Pages.
No, wait. There's more.
You got to have
resources.
Money for material, and you got to have money to pay the help. All right.
Here's what I want to tell you. Here's what
Wait a minute, Chris. Let me put this out here. Legal tender. Let me go a history lesson real quick. On July 4th, 1776, some very wealthy men got around with the Declaration of Independence, and this country was born. Now, 200 to 300 years prior to that, you had people in this country, including George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and God knows how, that got wealthy because they didn't have what we would call money today. The United States dollar didn't even get legislated into existence until 16 years after the Declaration of Independence. I don't know if you guys have been to, matter of fact, Chris, you could have been there. Not Chris, Carlos. Mount Vernon, which is the George Washington estate, which is up for visitation today. How did that get built before July 4, 1776? Money, or the United States dollar, which is the legal tender of the federal government of the United States, is only one type of financial resource. How are the Amish able to establish their communities in the United States? They had to buy materials, but a lot of them, I'll give an example. I had a great uncle, Uncle Jose. Uncle Jose had the skill set to go out into the woods, source his own wood, and make his own lumber before there was a Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, or Ace Hardware store. I look at when you don't have a lot of a particular financial resource, okay, there are other financial resources. This country, once again, the United States dollar did not even exist until 16 years after the Declaration of Independence was signed into existence. So how could these plantations, these homeowners, these people with, vast swaths of land, how could they do it? I'm done, and Pianki, you've heard me on this podcast. How could former slaves with no college education, no bank account, no government programs, how could they get out here and build their own towns? If you have a skill set, that is a financial resource. If you have the proper amount of social capital, like the Amish and the Mennonite do, you can build a house. You can build a town. There's several types of financial resources. If all you know is money, or money in the form of legal tender, then you are limited. Chris Carlos.
All right, yes. And what I was going to say is I've actually gave every person all the way through, all the way, we want the people that feel they don't have a chance. Every one of them, if the government's paying for, if they're getting Section 8, they can be a homeowner. That legislation has been passed, and it's because I went through Ben Carson and Trump, Obama, all the way back to Bush. You know, there was many times that I was standing right there, falling upon deaf ears. But when Ben Carson got it, he responded. When Governor Newsom got it, he responded with an action. They just passed a law in November of last year, so it's 1 year ago this month, that they're building 42,000 steel-framed homes in California for the homeless, 84 square feet. They don't have a bathroom. So that didn't fix the problem. That put a Band-Aid on it again. But they gave it a $5.8 billion budget, not counting any of the budgets of the cities. I have machinery that make 2 feet of material per second. That's 120 feet of material per minute. I'll supply it to any job site you got, anything being built, and know that the profit coming from that material, instead of going to Negwire or the other steel companies, because you have them, you ain't got to order my material. It ain't going to come cut to length, though. It's not going to be custom made. That's the difference, because when you go into a building, you built them, right? You built them skyscrapers. Those buildings, when you get those studs, they're either 8 foot, 9 foot, 10 foot. Well, you know what? That causes a problem for the sheetrocker, because I was one. And that causes a problem for them, because then they got to rip an inch off the sheet and then flip it over and turn it around to put it on the wall, because that piece of stud needed to be 10 foot 1. Because when you put the ceiling in, with that 5-inch sheetrock, and you got an even 1/2 inch coming up off the floor, do the math. It don't work if that stud ain't 10 foot 1. But they don't come to you that way. I'll bring them to you that way. But they also don't use this in residential. They use it in commercial. But we're losing all of our commercial workers. So I want to show our children what they're capable of with the palms of their hands. There is peace on earth, but it's in your hands. I don't want to give away anything. I'm not asking anybody for nothing other than to pay attention, because it's free. There is an option. You can use HUD money right now. For the first time in history, you can use it to build affordable housing. They've never let you do that. You have to go get a loan, build the house, and then they'll make you a payment every month. You become a slumlord. But let's stop the slumlords and make them landlords. Make them the landlord. They need pride. They need to be picked up. They need to know how amazing they are and what the future is going to bring. But it don't need us to step on them. I don't want them hurt. And if they are, they need to be covered. You are correct. We do in a special event. We need to have that coverage, because I don't want anybody to be hurt. But if you can have it, because we make up to 36,000 linear feet per day at each factory. There's three. Now, I might not be monetarily rich. I am probably monetarily the most poor man on earth. But you know what? There ain't no monetary gain for me to help someone that's in need that it will ever pay me. And I walked away from profit in 2005. And if you don't think I can make money, I can go make money, but I'm limited. 90% of my body, I can go make so much money. And so can you, and so can everyone else. But the other part is you're a creator every second of the day. What can you create bring you in monetary gain? If you take a penny and double it every day for 30 days, or if I gave you $10,000 a day for the next 90 days, which one are you going to take? That's you. Okay. I I want you to answer that question. I'll either give you $900,000 or I'll give you a penny a day doubled for 30 days. Which one would you
give me the penny. The penny.
Yeah, you're going to take the penny if you got any sense. The 10 is on the second day. Do the math. Find out what you got after 30. Okay? That's facts. Truth, no change. I didn't ask you for any change. I asked you to change what you're thinking about to others. How much money did you make last year? How much did you give? How much time did you spend creating something for your children's children to change? Be the change today that you want to see so that tomorrow, yesterday, never will be. That's what we need to be. And that's one, that's an original for me right there. So there you go.
Let me put this out here, particularly when it comes to, I'm going to say financial resources. Now, one of the financial resources that is available to a lot of people is what we call money. Money in the form of legal tender, United States dollars, or if you're in Europe, euro, or Swiss franc, or pesos if you're in Mexico, or what have you. That's just one form. And in some cases, you've got to have it. Well, in many cases, you've got to have it. But it's just one distinction of a financial resource. Now, this podcast that we're on, this live stream, my primary function of it, I really don't mention this, is for me to build up social capital. I believe that relationships are more important than money. However, you can convert a relationship into money at the appropriate time. The smartphone that I'm talking on right now, which is probably worth about $1,200, I got it as a gift about a year ago. And all I can say is it came through social capital. I never asked for it. It came as a gift. But I had developed social capital with this particular person for a period of time, and I got this phone. The cell phone service that allows me to speak on it, coming through T-Mobile. I don't even pay for it. More social capital. The 4 acres that I have down here in Florida, now, I announced this on this podcast way before I even met Chris Carlos. We said the first, we're going to take 25% of that land, which is an acre, 1 acre, and we're going to allow people to have, at no charge, community events. Now I got Chris and Carlos on the phone. I've talked to these guys for, 2 weeks? Chris may be knocking at the door 3 weeks. And I've learned every time they open up their mouth, I'm taking notes. I got a note thing on my phone. I'm looking at that. That's all social capital. And they have provided ways in which I can take that social capital from the ideas. See, ideas can be converted into money, too. That ideas are intellectual property, which Carlos, that's his lane. It's not my lane. It's his lane. So money can come in different forms.
Brother, let me tell you about intellectual property and patent portfolios. A lot of people don't know this, but a small patent portfolio on a technology that is valuable, has commercial value, gives you 10x on your investment. And you can assume that every patent costs you about $35,000. That's the rule of thumb. So, you know, for every $35,000 you invest in patent, and this is technology that's patentable, that has value, right? You get 10x on a small portfolio. I'm talking like 7-8 patents in the U.S., a few patents overseas. When the portfolios get into the thousands, okay, those portfolios are worth 80 to 100x. So, and the math is there. You can, these sales happen all the time. So, for example, Motorola sells a patent portfolio of 4,000 patents We don't know how much they paid to get those patents, but we assume it cost them about $35,000 a patent, okay? But we know what they sold it for, and now we can calculate the ratio, and that ratio is 80 to 100 times the cost of getting the patent. So, you know, as far as monetization goes, you know, everything we're doing is patent protected, so we have a way of commercializing it, and we have a path to 10 to 100x. So for the people that are into money, you know, yeah, there's money that can be made.
Yeah, and I know I'm going to have a I told you so moment on here within the near future. I know that's going to happen. I told you so. Okay. But you have to look like, say, financial resources. It takes more. I mean, because I rarely ask for anything. I've never had, almost 9 years, I don't ask for commercial time. I don't ask for sponsorship, none of that stuff. But due to the fact that, once again, I value relationships are more important than money, but those relationships, once you build up that social capital, and social capital, it was something that Carlos said yesterday, and I mentioned the term at the beginning of this podcast today, that I got 7 business models out of it where I can, that idea that Carlos put out here, I can convert into the money that I need, you know, to pay for somebody's expenses, to pay for building material, for that thing, just by him, just by mentioning it. All right, so we're going to have a I told you so moment. Because people, here's one thing. If you're really a financialist, Stu, you have to learn how to operate without money, without legal tender. Some people don't know how to do that. Carlos, when he was homeless, see, what I like about Carlos's story is he learned how to get things done. He learned how to do what he needed to do without having limited amount of cash. If you don't have any money, but if you got good health, I'll give you $1 billion. If you are bedridden, can't take a piss without hurting, what good is $1 billion going to do you? A lot of people don't know how to operate without cash. I know how to operate without cash. For the 4 acres that I have, or whatever acres I have, you know, Chris Carl, whoever, or Robin, if she was here, I took care of that. All I need you to do, let's partner up and do something together. Now, Chris, when, you know, first week we talked, he's got a nonprofit fee, which is very reasonable, and expense fee. That's going to require some cash money, all right? I get that. But the kind of value that he's already given, matter of fact, I didn't even, look, what are the dividends that I'm going to convert into money, and I'm sure others will too, by Chris introducing me to Carlos on day one within the first 5 to 10 minutes, is going to yield me a bunch of money somewhere down the line soon. I would be shortchanging myself and say, well, guys, you got to pay me so much to be on this show every day. I would be cheating myself if I did that. But we're going to have some, I see there's a need that we're going to have some podcasts on how to operate without money. Social capital. When Carlos gave his story of when he was homeless, he was operating on social capital. If he slept at he had his car, so if he slept at a friend's couch or in a friend's garage, today we call that shit Airbnb. There's a monetary value on that. So Chris was nice. Carlos was nice enough. He had enough social capital because there's some people, which is the origins of Into My House, with the house sitter, we're done. Any kind of social capital that she had with me, because she lived in my house in Washington, D.C., which can rent out for $3,000 a month. We're done. So he had enough social capital to sleep in somebody's house. If they gave him food to eat, there's a monetary value that we can attach to that, too. So we're going to have some end-up conversations and even boot camps on how to operate without cash. Because if the only way you know how to operate is solely on cash, I feel sorry for you. Granted, it is needed. Once again, when the workshops we're going to do with Chris, his nonprofit, they need money. I get that. They're going to get it. To bring them to a certain place is going to cost some money for airplane ticket or whatever, mode of transportation. All right, that's going to get it. But the thing is, him and Carlos have paid a bunch of stuff. They've paid afford a lot of stuff information in the form of social capital within the last two and a half, 3 weeks, whatever it's been. All right, so we're going to have an I told you so moment here very soon. That's all I can say. I hate to say it, I told you so, but I know I'm going to have to do I told you so. So in any event, and the thing is, let me put this out here too, because we got to wrap up. It's when it comes to intellectual property, when it comes to an idea, a concept or whatever, and here's where a lot of people lose it. Okay, they miss it. And let me use billionaires as an example. You know, because they're less than 3,000 billionaires on the planet. There are over 8 billion people on the planet, but less than 3,000 billionaires. And what two guys have talked about is worth over $1 billion. What I've learned over the years is this. And I really don't want to get religious with this, because you can be an atheist and still absorb this. God, the creator, Allah, Buddha, whatever, never gave a vision or an idea to a committee. Whatever idea that you got in your mind to do something, the worst thing you can possibly do is try to get it validated through somebody else. When Carlos got the idea for Dream Habitat, that there's a drawing of it online that you can see every day, all right, he gave that to Carlos because whatever source that might be, he gave that to Carlos, or that source gave it to Carlos because Carlos had the life experiences and the intelligence to birth that concept, that idea into existence, including monetizing it or trading it for whatever, euros, pesos, or whatever. And I'll use this example. I'll close with this, with Noah's Ark. Noah was given a vision of what to do. Specifically, you know, the ark is supposed to be this cubit. He gave all the directions. He didn't give it to Noah's wife. He didn't give it to Noah's kids. He didn't give it to Noah's neighbors. He gave it to Noah specifically. And people laughed at him, including his wife. But when that flood came, when everybody was ass out and drowning, he and his family were all right. So with the instructions that we've heard from Chris and Carlos, we know what to do. It's just, all we need to do is just follow up on what we're doing. So that's where I'm at. I'm not listening to anything. but what we can do. I can listen to people all day long on what can't be done. All I'm listening to is what can be done. Carlos?
No, I was just going to say, you know, about 2 points, the committee and NOAA, you know, whenever you come up with any idea, you will have 1,000 people that will tell you how stupid it is, you know, all the problems with it. Not one person will give you a solution, okay? That's what I have found out, that you put out an idea that it's human nature. You know, humans don't want to see other people succeed. I'm not sure why, okay? So that's point number one to the committees. Yes, you're 100% correct. I had all the mycologists, all the experts in aquaponics, because I'm not a, you know, I'm an electrical engineer. I'm not a biologist, all telling me how dumb I was, it's not going to work, et cetera. You know, so that always happens. Secondly, on Noah's Ark, we do have a flood coming, okay? You know, these greenhouses, the reason I want to build them and I want people to build them and I made videos of how to freaking build them is because we're heading towards this, okay? Food security is going to be a major, major, major issue. It already is, including water security. So this stuff should have been done 10 years ago. You know, 10 years ago, that's when we should have started. We're behind the eight ball right now, and we need to act immediately. So thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, and they've displayed enough concrete information that I know it works. Okay, all I'm saying is, in my lane, I got the land already. Hey, have at it. Do what you want to do out here in the woods. That's done. Okay, people, I've had that land for about 7 years now, waiting on those two in particular. All right. And then I've seen, like, everything they've talked about, I've seen it duplicated in other places. Like I said, I got into this type of thinking and thought and practice over in a little small village over in Germany. So, but when I came back over here on the grid, and there are a lot of people in this country that live off the grid. So I know everything they're talking about can be done. So it's just for now, it's this time to, you know, and anyway. So, Carlos, as we close out, because we're on Clubhouse, how can we, what time, and I know it's a holiday and everything, where can people come to get in on the conversation and plans on once again, people, now come to Clubhouse positive. We don't need to hear what can't be done. If you don't have no solution, we don't want to hear. Carlos, tell us what we need to do for Clubhouse.
Yeah, it's really simple. There's a club called Hope for Dream Habitat. And Clubhouse also has houses, but we won't talk about that. But there's a club called Hope for Dream Habitat. So you get on Clubhouse and you can search. And if you type that in, Hope for Dream Habitat, you will find the club and you can join the club. And then we have rooms that we schedule. Like, for example, this entire conversation that was recorded on this podcast was broadcast in one of the rooms live. At 9 o'clock, thanks to LA, we decided that, you know, 9 o'clock is going to be our time, our second time when we can meet and brainstorm. So 10:30 is the podcast, and at 9 p.m. we can meet and brainstorm. We haven't had a lot of activity. You know, we're looking, we're just building the snowball, but that's how you can find it. Hope for Dream Habitat on Clubhouse. Chris Collins also has a club called Hope. Chris could probably tell you the path to that, but we're joined at the hips now. So Chris is me, and I'm Chris as far as I'm concerned. Thank you.
Okay. Well, the thing is, in the embryo stage, like I say, what's going to happen is this, and I'm going to do it. I told you so one right there. Once we come together, and people, that's what I was saying, once they see us put together something, then people are going to come out of the woodwork. You know, we're accessible right now, but within a year, we won't be as accessible. I already know how it's going to go.
I can tell you now. It ain't an I told you. If I already I told you, because I told you, and I showed you, because you looked at my If you look at my Instagram, and that's Chris_Hope_Collins. Chris Collins is my name. But hope is something that's in me. It's in you because you're a human on planet Earth. But there's a mission for humans on planet Earth, and that is housing our people everywhere, honoring everywhere, honoring our patriots everywhere. Doesn't matter what country you're from, still a human race, right? But look there on my Instagram. Kids in the factory in Louisiana building a Habitat for Humanity house. And they outbuilt the adults next door. They had never built anything. They never touched a saw. But it's what they saw. They saw what they were able to do. And if you look through any more of the stories, you'll see that they built something else too. And it was much bigger. But it's because they now realize something. I don't have to go play a game. I can be part of it. And the game of life, there's something everybody needs, and that's why. You need to know why you're here. W-H-Y. Wealth, health, and you. You can't have two. Those three are your synergy. If you had wealth and health and didn't know you, how many people have committed suicide that had all that stuff, right? They didn't know them. They were lost. So if you had you and you had your health, but you didn't have any wealth, are you happy? No, because you don't have all three. If you had your wealth and you, but you didn't have your health, that was the clue that L.A. told you. You could have $1 billion, and if you couldn't take it with you, what are you going to do? What legacy are you going to leave behind? You know, I've made it to where we want to take poverty to prosper. But you have to have your why. And I've been doing this and ain't figured out exactly where it is I'm going because I'm on the adventure of life. But at the same time, I'm seeing people trying to survive. And I would like to see them thrive. And if I can make them smile with what they're going through, there's no payment that you'll ever give me in monetary gain that make that happen. Because the next time I see them, they're going to smile at me. They're going to know that I'm the same person that day as I will be then. Maybe I might be more because I keep meeting amazing people like this. Because maybe I can share more. Maybe I know more because I love to learn. But it's not about what I'm going to earn. What you're going to earn by paying attention. The only thing in life you can do for free, you make up your own mind. I'll never make it up for you, but don't make up someone else's. Give them a chance to choose on their own. But if there's an option and you can do something, will you do it? Or will you just keep the blinders on and keep looking forward? You think outside the box? Well, I'm going to tell you there ain't no box. I ain't found one yet. I'm going to correct him on when you can come to Clubhouse and what you can say. I want to hear your problems every day. I don't know what the problems are in every city across the planet, every town, every village, every rural area. I don't know. Unless you come and share them. Tell me what they are. And let's put a claim to them problems and know you're not alone.
I do have a team, a huge team. It keeps growing every day. Come be part of it. Because you and I together is why. That's unity. And if you put unity in the word community, you truly have one. If you put unity in an opportunity, you truly have one. And right now, you have one. And I'll end there.
Thank you, Chris. Well, I'm ending on this. This is Thanksgiving weekend here. So I'm ending on gratitude and giving thanks. If you have an important, and one of the reasons why I play the Jamarian Styles audio every single, practically every single day to start this podcast off, is because don't let anybody tell you what you can't do. He's a perfect example, and we're trying to get him on here, of, once again, this guy had no hands, stumps for arms. He was confident enough, crazy, whatever you want to call him, to ask, tell the coach, you know, I want to be a part of the team. He went out for the team with no hands and made the basketball team. I'm a former basketball player. I don't know how he did it. He didn't play much. He could have quit the team, but he didn't. And then when he finally got in the game, here's a guy with two stumps. He scored 2 3-point baskets, scoring 6 points. So as we go into this Thanksgiving weekend, which is, National Hunger and Homelessness Week, is that what works for me is you give thanks in advance before there's anything visible to be thankful for. Now, I'm going to put this out here. In November of 2023, or whatever today's date is, I don't know what today's date is, but in November of 2023, Thanksgiving weekend, we're going to build no less than 25 structures that either tiny houses, carports, or Chris's greenhouse, an aquaponics greenhouse, his dream house. How that's going to be right now, I have a clue, but I'm just giving thanks in advance. And a year from today, I'm going to say it now so I won't have to say it then. I told you so. On that note, everyone have a great day.
Thank you.